Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
I thought we had it yesterday, guys. I really did think that we'd finally gotten what we've been talking about for, 2 months? That we were going to get Major League Baseball. There was a brief flurry of Twitter activity yesterday where we thought they'd reached an agreement, where we thought baseball, the owners, and baseball, the players, had figured out a way to get the full prorated salary, to get the amount of games that they wanted, and we were getting ready to start Major League Baseball. And then, sure as the nose on all of our faces, it wasn't. And now we're still where we are. Well, we want more games, or we want this, or we want that. And this is exactly what baseball is waiting for, right? They know that suckers like me are sitting there waiting for that tweet to come across to say, hey, it's time to go. Let's go back to baseball. And we'd be like, all right, the Dodger channel's on DirecTV. I can't wait for the games to come back. I can't wait to see Mookie Betts. I can't wait to see Cody Bellinger. Let's go. That's what they're betting on. All of our enthusiasm for the sport, knowing that we're going to forget all of the crap that we had to deal with to get to this point. That's both of their plays.
Well, it certainly is. But at the end of the day, though, Travis, it's going to happen that way. We're going to complain. We're going to kick. We're going to stomp. You set us up. Oh, we're mad. You told us we were playing. We got to wait another 2 weeks. And then guess what? We'll be sitting right there with our clicker in our hand, going from channel to channel, looking at strikeout to strikeout, home run to home run, out to out. It's just it's nothing you could do about it. If football was to do this, we'd be doing the same thing. Baseball, basketball, any sport that we are embedded in, that we enjoy watching, don't do what we want them to do when we want them to do it. We're going to get mad for a short period of time, but we're not going anywhere. And they know that. They know that. And they know that they're going to get to that 70-game mark.
I'm telling you right now, Key and Travis, if badminton tries this mess, I'm not watching any more badminton. I'm putting my foot down. I'm not coming back. I'm not coming back if it's badminton does it. But you're right about baseball, though, Key. You are right. I am going to come back. It's just that I'm going to come back with an eye roll. I'm not going to come, and I may not come back as often. That's the other thing, too.
But, LZ, why are you coming back with an eye roll this time? Because they've done this to us before. They've yanked our chain before.
Yeah, but we've never had a pandemic like this, not in our lifetime. The last time we had anything close to this was the influenza situation in 1918. Mm-hmm. The country, let alone the world, has never had to stop like this and then find a way to restart like this. And we're trying to figure out how to restart together as a country. And you over here still acting like it's regular time. This ain't regular time.
But this is exactly what they do. Because think about this. Had they been the first to get back, golf is back, NASCAR is back, there are other sports that are back. Basketball is about 6 weeks away from coming back. The MLS is about 3 weeks away from coming back. So these sports are back. There was a way to get back quicker. That baseball just sacrificed all of that, forfeited all of that. It's not a surprise because had they been the only ones on TV for a couple of weeks, they would have had an opportunity to maybe pull a couple of people back to their side. Not that basketball fans and football fans are all of a sudden going to say, oh, I don't like that anymore. I'm all about baseball because the major leaguers beat the NBA guys back by a couple of weeks. Not that, but just if they had the stage to themselves for a month or so, there would have been people that, like you just said, LZ, I'm going to watch a little bit less. Maybe the opposite was true, too, that maybe if they got back first, they would have watched a little bit more, remembered why they loved baseball as much as they did, were forgotten why they left because of steroids or work stoppages or whatever reason, the pace of the game drove them away or whatever. But maybe the opportunity to bring them back was there, and they didn't care about that. So I'm mad at them because it's stupid. I'm mad at them because I haven't gotten to watch baseball. I'm mad at them because they're the only league that hasn't figured out a way to do this. But I'm also going to go – I'm going to be standing right there when they relaunch it. If they didn't try to get anybody else, there's no reason, pandemic or not, where they were going to try to get this right for the first time ever, because this is what they do.
It is what they've done in the past. They've kind of muddied the waters a little bit. But I would say that when you start to look at the owners are looking at the money, man. And at the end of the day, they're trying to get the best deal struck for them. They don't care about the pandemic. They don't care about the country and the social issues that we're going through. They could care less about that. What they care about is at the end of the day, the accountant says we netted out $65 million, and here's how we got there.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they care about. They don't want to hear we netted out $28 million, and here's how we got there. They want to hear netting out the max that they could potentially get from this. And the way that they're doing it is by prolonging the situation. But as they prolong the situation, they understand that at the end of the day, the longer you wait, the easier it is for the players to say, you know what, never mind. Because now the numbers and the finances shrink for the players even more. So they're facing a time that they've got to now sign off on it, because the longer they wait, those numbers going to shrink. They ain't going to be able to fit 77 games into a season if they starting in August.
One of the things
I'm just so disappointed. I'm just so disappointed.
At some point, it ain't going to be worth it for the players to play.
Something's better than nothing, right? I mean,
that's very true. But at some point, you start to do the math and you sit back as a group and you say, well, if we only going to play 50 games and they only going to pay us based on this, and we've been telling them the whole time, no, no, no. We've wasted 3 months of playing by saying no, no, no. So what are we going to do? We're going to accept this, or are we just going to say forget it?
Well, no, they'll come back. I think that the people that would just choose not to come back would be very small. We'll ask Pedro some of this coming up in just a bit. But because even at 50 games, if I'm making – and let's not pick Mike Trout, who makes $38 million, or Clayton Kershaw, who makes $36 million, but the rank-and-file guys in this league – that are making, you know, let's say $600,000-$700,000, and I get a third of that money, I need that couple hundred grand to keep my life turning in this thing. So most of these guys are going to come back, and they can't do that tell us when and where thing. And then when the league says, okay, where is in your home stadium and when is on, you know, July 15th, and we're going to pay you a full prorated portion, at that point they can't say, oh, no, no, we don't do it because of X, Y, and Z. Their whole when and where thing is working. It's generating some traction. People are finally seeing is, you know what, the players are the ones that are willing to go back to work. They can't dig their heels in after they get an answer to when and where.
No, they won't be able to dig their heels in on when and where, but not for 50 games. You can't
get
a when and where for 50 games.
Why not?
Because the owners aren't, because the players aren't going to play 50 games if the owners are keeping X amount of money.
But then, no, if they're at the 50 game mark, if it's a full, the proposal, the put it this way, the doomsday scenario is Rob Manfred says, we're playing a 50 game schedule, we're starting on this day. That also includes that the players will get all of their money, the prorated version. It's not going to be a percentage of their money. So they'd be getting all of it. The reason the players want more games is because they know they'll get more money. The reason the owners want less is so they'll have to pay more money. But once
The owners is going to keep that 162. Or better yet, they're going to keep that 112.
Right.
They don't keep 112 games worth of money and only have to shell out 50 games.
Yeah, but that's gone. Whenever the games are gone, the players aren't getting any of that money back, whether it's 50 or 70. They just want to start the clock sooner, and the owners want the opposite of that. The players, when the players get the when and where, the answer to that question, they'll go back.
That is so frustrating. It's so frustrating because you completely understand where the players are coming from. And because the owners are somewhat faceless, they certainly aren't on camera nearly as much as their employees or players, they're going to get a pass. You know, they're going to be allowed to do this because we won't be able to get them. You know, we won't be able to boo them. We won't be able to really express ourselves other than staying away, which takes commitment that I, for one, am not willing to put it forth right now. And I don't think a lot of people are committed to not watching baseball because they're angry about this. It's just a damn shame is what it is. It's just a damn shame that in the midst of this pandemic, as everyone in the country is trying to figure out how to restart our economy and get things back up and running, that they're trying to use this opportunity, this time in history, to try and shoehorn some BS ahead of schedule for their CBA negotiations. This is bonkers. It's ridiculous. But once again, you're reminded why a lot of people have ill feeling towards owners of teams. It's because of stuff like this.
You know, LZ, one of the things that they're trying to shoehorn in is expanded playoffs, that they want to put 16 teams into the playoff pool at the end of this season and next season as well, that that's part of the negotiation that the owners want in, because playoff games are a cash machine for the owners. And that's money that the players don't really share in to any meaningful degree. There's also this. The more rounds of playoffs, the more teams you put into the playoffs, the worse it is for a team like the Dodgers, right? Because what have we talked about for the last multiple years is the randomness of the postseason, that if you run into a hot pitcher like the Dodgers did in the Nats last year, you're out. But if you run into a hot team at this point, or the opposite is true, you just happen to have a bad weekend, you can get knocked out. The more teams you put into the pool, the playoff pool, the more chances that you have to get caught by one of those hot teams, the more chances you have to have a bad weekend and get knocked out. And I know that there'll be some tears and some buys, but the more people that get invited to the party, the less chance you have to walk away with the trophy.
That's why we don't want them going to the party.
Right.
Let's keep them out.
You're the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Astros or one of those teams that has a really good chance of winning the World Series, you want it as narrow as possible and you want the season as long as possible. But we've already introduced randomness to this because we're going to be playing basically a third of a season. And then you're upping the randomness even more by putting more than half the league into the postseason. Good luck on who's coming out of that. Especially in basketball, you'd still get the right teams coming out of it. In baseball, there is absolutely no guarantee that you wouldn't get some weird Pirates Royals World Series at the end of the day because both of those teams got hot for 3 weeks.
That'd be an ugly World Series. Royals and the Pirates?
It could happen.
I mean, but what would be more disgusting? What may end up happening in baseball? What could happen in basketball because of the shortened season and the way that things are being played out? You know, a lot of these leagues, you know, the NFL right now
is excluded from this conversation. But basketball really ain't a shortened season.
But a lot of leagues, yeah, it is.
I mean, they missed 20% five not extra be games, man.
No, 20% is not being played, man. That's a good chunk.
But the seedings, for the most part, was already set. You already kind of knew it was going.
No, they weren't. They were far from being set. They were far from being set.
You had a few teams on the back end hanging around.
That's a whole bunch of teams between 2 and 8 in the Western Conference alone that were within a handful of games of each other.
But not out of the playoffs, though, LZ. They was going to the playoffs.
You don't think there's a difference between the Clippers being the number 2 seed and the number 7 seed? Because they could have failed.
Houston
could have rose.
They're such a good team. I don't think it even matters. When you're really good, it don't matter what seeding you are.
This is what every league is going to deal with, what the conversation we're having right now. In baseball, you only played a third of the season. In basketball, there was 20% of the season that was unplayed, and we got a bad deal because the seedings were set earlier than they should have been, and now I had to play this team early when I would have had to play them late. I would have had a chance to find my footing. The tennis that we've talked about, all of a sudden, half of the tennis world might not show up for the U.S. Open, and whoever the champion is, it's going to be like, great, you get to hold the trophy up, and you get to be called a U.S. champion. But the other half of the tennis world said, dude, half of the best players in the world didn't even show up. What does that trophy actually mean? Every single sport, every single league is going to have to deal with this because a portion of the season either didn't get played or a portion of the players just decided not to show up and compete.
Yeah, which is, you know, it is an interesting time because you have to forgive the circumstances, right? Like Serena Williams put out her video yesterday. She says she's playing. We all know she's trying to break this record by Margaret Court. We all know she's trying to add to her collection of Grand Slam titles. But because of the players who may not show up, including the woman who beat her in last year's Wimbledon final, she's not going to play. It does raise the issue of, okay, you won, but the field was weakened.
Yeah, but she was in the finals anyway, though. She'd be going to the finals and doing her thing anyway, just losing in the final. I wouldn't even look at it that way, though.
Maybe the reason she loses in the finals, Key, is because every person leading up to the final takes a little bit out of her. And by the time she gets there, maybe
that is the case, but I would never look at somebody who wins a championship and say, well, you only won because so-and-so wasn't there. Well, Akeem Olajuwon only won because Michael Jordan wasn't there. I'm not going to look at it that way.
Why would I bring that up?
People do that to baseball. We do that to baseball all the time. We look and go, yeah, you got the records, but you know what that is, right? You wouldn't let us play. So, I mean, it happens.
No, I couldn't do that because that wouldn't be right. People work too hard. People work too hard in train and do all the things that they need to do to prepare themselves to win a championship despite who's in front of them.
We'll ask these questions when baseball might finally get their agreement to Pedro Gomez, who joins us next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right, we thought we had a deal, at least for a couple of minutes yesterday. Hopefully we're getting closer to some Major League Baseball. Joining us right now, MLB insider for ESPN, friend of the program, Pedro Gomez, joining us. Good morning, Pedro. How are you?
I am well. Well, guys.
Well, I'm well, too. Man, why y'all trying to screw things up in baseball? Won't y'all just get y'all ass out there, sign up the deal, and let's go. What are the owners doing? Why are the owners playing tit for tat back and forward, nickel and diming the players?
LZ, I think they're at the one-yard line. I think
Whoa. That was Keyshawn. Oh, and the fact that you don't know the difference after all these years? Pedro.
So much labor peace for 25 years, and now all of a sudden, even when there's not a CBA, it's this. It's obviously been very ugly. It's not pretty. The game is the one hurting the most, but the owners truly do recognize they have to have a game this year, no matter how long it is. There has to be a game. And they're just trying to win as much face as possible. They're going to have to give a little bit more, but it's not going to be a lot more. And then I believe a deal will get done. And I believe it'll get done. I'm hoping within the next 48 hours it should be done. And we'll know that baseball is coming back, man, sometime in July.
I got it getting done by Monday.
Okay, Key. That's Monday is good. 72 hours, 96 hours, whatever it is. Who cares? As long as it's done. There is still a little bit of time. We've talked about this. There's a little bit of time for them to finish by September 27th and still get a – it's not obviously going to be a normal season, but there's going to be a season. And if it's 60, 66, 68 games, whatever it is, we'll have something done.
So, Pedro, I'm going to assume if they couldn't keep it together during a pandemic, that we're basically going to have a work stoppage in a couple of years, right? Like, this is just a foregone conclusion. We got to get the chips in now because there's going to be a work stoppage.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a CBA through next year. So after the 2021 season is when it expires. It's probably going to be a contentious negotiation, but there is at least time to get one done. It expires on December 1st of 2021. The season doesn't start. Spring training starts in February of 2022. So there's time in there between now and then. Look, once they get this done and they get this season going, negotiations for the next CBA will begin sometime this year, whether that's October, November, December, somewhere in there. So they'll have a full year to get something done, or more than a year, actually. There's no reason there should be a work stoppage in 2022. Then again, man, this should have been a done deal already, and it's not. So, it's
exactly.
Yeah, you're right, LZ. It's not pretty. It's not pretty, but there's at least time to shelve that thought for a while.
And where are they talking about playing? Is it going to not be in a bubble? Is it going to be at the normal city sites in the states that they're in? What are they going to do about that?
Yeah. The Dodgers will be at Dodger Stadium. The Angels at the Big A, the Padres down at Petco. Everyone will play at home except the Blue Jays because Canada has, you know, they have a mandatory quarantine when you go into Canada. So the Blue Jays will have to play in the U.S. They'll find a place for them to play in the U.S. But otherwise, everyone is supposed to play. You know, the bigger issue is, and we're seeing it right now with this spike again, just because they start, and I think I said this last time I was on, doesn't mean they'll be able to cross the finish line. Mm-hmm. If something happens and players start testing positive, they'll have to stop the whole thing. And if they do stop the whole thing, I don't believe they'll restart it. I believe that'll be it.
Pedro Gomez joining us here on the Sprint People's Hotline. Pedro, how much do you think the owner's most recent offer was in response to the when and where mantra that the players adopted and the effectiveness that that seemed to be having in the public relations fight? Because once they started doing that, people, I think, started to realize, you know what? The players are willing to go. Did that force the owners to make a real proposal back to them?
I do believe that that did play into it. I do believe that overall, from the start of this, the owners have been on the losing end of the PR battle, which is really rare because it's almost all historically, it's always been the players who are on the losing end. Even if they are right, they're on the losing end of the PR battle because fans just get upset with the players. Why aren't you out there playing? It's a kid's game. Go play. Be lucky that what you do for a living, you know, that whole argument without really knowing all the facts. And in this case, the owners are the ones that have lost the PR battle. And that is really, really rare when it comes to any labor issue in professional sports. So they absolutely are seen as the villains. And I think the owners said, okay, we got to do something because otherwise we're losing all our customers for next year, the year after, the year after, and who knows for how long.
Well, see, I think, though, that at the end of the day, the owners came out in because the players opened up their mouth early on, it made it seem like the players were greedy and selfish. But once someone got a hold of them and told them to just settle down a little bit, it swayed back to the player side. And even now, by the owners putting a proposal together that they put together a week or so ago that looked very shady, made everything shift back to the players. But I think that regardless to when it starts back up, and I know people think that fans are going to run away. No, they're going to still watch. They might watch angry, mad, but they still going to watch. They can't go to games this year anyway, so you really ain't going to know.
I completely agree. I think television numbers will go through the roof, and I think everyone will be saying, I'm not watching, even though at home they're sneaking on the TV and watching. They just won't let anyone know they're watching. The numbers will indicate otherwise. But, Key, you're absolutely right. I think that they're going to say, nope, I don't watch an inning, but yet if you really got in their house, they'll be watching. Mm-hmm.
What can we expect in terms of quality of play? You know, we might get it back, but is it going to suck?
It's not going to suck because these are still the best players on the planet. But that's a long layoff without playing games. You know, they only played up until about March 12th or 13th of spring training games. So they had about 2 weeks. And don't forget, the first 2 weeks of spring training, guys are getting one at-bat and then leaving and going to play golf.
And if there's any indication – of Kelly breaking that window, that's what it's going to look like. when he was in there warming up or whatever he was doing.
Yeah. Here's I think, the bigger issue, that if pitchers haven't been staying in shape this entire time, we could very well see some injuries or pitchers just saying, I can't go. That's going to be a potential issue. Is the health of players if they have not been staying in shape. And we're going to find that out.
Pedro, what about just the expanded playoffs? That if 16 teams are coming in, we're talking about more than half the league. We already know that baseball's postseason is random, that just baseball lends itself to randomness. Now we've added more randomness with more teams. Is baseball not worried about getting some really bizarre championship round where you have the Pirates and the Royals or something like that playing each other?
I think they are actually looking forward to that possibility. Look, right now, 33% of the teams make the postseason. Under this new format, it's more than 50% that will make the postseason. That's a huge jump from 10 to 16 to make the playoffs. And I think it's going to create a lot of excitement in a lot of cities that normally would just be on the sidelines that late in the season. And I would not be surprised if this is something that we see in the future in the next CBA, because really think about it. In the last 10, 15 years, we've all of a sudden seen tanking in baseball. Teams are okay to lose 100 games for 4 years in a row so that they get those high draft picks and try to rebound. But yet during those 4 years, if you're a fan of that team in that city, it's like, why am I watching this? This is garbage. This may eliminate that, or at least greatly reduce teams from that philosophy. And that's not necessarily a bad thing for the game.
When you talk about it being added into the next CBA, would you put the DH in the National League in there? Do you think that will stick? Will that be the new normal?
Yes, I think once you get something, it rarely goes away. And if the DH does come into play here in this little 2-year agreement that they're lining up, I think pitchers batting are going to that's going to be for that 16th inning. Hey, we have no one left on the bench. You know, go grab a bat. Zach Greinke, Madison Bumgarner, whoever. I do believe that the DH is probably going to be permanent from now on. And there's not people that are happy with that.
Pedro, you mentioned, guys in shape and staying healthy and things like that. Who's the one player that you think can come back looking like an offensive lineman?
Oh, you mean like Nate Newton, offensive lineman?
a guy that could be, you know, all of a sudden he done put on pack.
David Wells. Yeah, he starts like off as Clay, you know, as Cody Bellinger, then he's
dead. Oh, boy. I'm trying to think of who was already bordering on that before.
Bartolo.
That who?
Bartolo Colon.
Oh, well, he's not.
He wasn't bordering.
But Bartolo was like that and pitched effectively. God, you're putting me on the spot in the sense of I can't think of somebody that was already kind of out of shape.
Albert Pujols?
No, Albert keeps himself in pretty good shape. He works during
that's
the
good shape?
Uh-oh. I mean, you know, baseball.
How about somebody like Kenley Jansen?
Ooh, there's a good one.
But Kenley works also. I mean, he's a big boy in the sense that he's got a big body, but he's not a tub of lard, so to speak. Well, you know what? Here's the thing. We're all going to know.
We'll find out soon enough, hopefully.
Can't hide on the field.
Before too long. Pedro Gomez, ESPN MLB insider. Pedro, as always, thanks a bunch. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, mi amigo.
All right. Colin Kaepernick had a workout with the Chargers, except for he didn't, but he might, and we'll see. Runways, very complicated about when he might come back. We'll try to untangle it all next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your goldfish to sing Bizet's Carmen? There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
So yesterday there was a little bit of confusion, right? There was a little bit of confusion because it looked like Colin Kaepernick was coming to the Chargers to work out, to see if he could get a spot on that team. And then it changed into they would consider a workout, that they would be crazy not to think about a workout. Let's take a listen very quickly here to Anthony Lynn saying, yeah, of course we would be crazy not to have Colin Kaepernick on our workout list.
Meow, meow.
All right, we'll get to that in just a second.
That's the second time that happened, man. What's going on?
How about this? The Chargers may be sincere, and I believe that they are, in wanting to bring Colin Kaepernick in. But I wonder if there is the right fit from Kaepernick's perspective. That Kaepernick going into a team where he would be a backup to start, and then all of a sudden you have a guy that was picked 6th overall waiting there. If Tyrod Taylor washes out, if he doesn't win, why would I want to go to another guy that's a temporary solution as opposed to the guy that I just spent some incredible draft capital to obtain with the number 6 overall pick?
You know, it you can go a couple different ways. What I've always been is a guy who sits back and says, if I was wearing that hat, and what would I do? And from an executive standpoint, I would have to obviously – look at the quarterback that I drafted at 6 and see if he's ready. And see if he's ready to take over when need be. But I always got to have a guy there to bridge him. Because I'm not one that thinks that young quarterbacks need to play immediately. And for whatever reason, and I don't know who it was recently, within the last 8 years or so, that was a rookie quarterback that came in and had success. I think it was Andrew Luck. And then all of a sudden, everybody feels like they got to play their rookie quarterback. They got to play their rookie quarterback. When I've always seen the rookies tend to sit and wait a little bit and learn what the professional game is all about before they actually get pushed into that position and go on and have success. Because when you throw guys in the fire like a Carr at Houston, his career was never the same. Or a Ryan Leaf, career never the same. But then on the flip side, you got a guy like Peyton Manning who career turned out to be pretty damn good, I must say.
Yeah, that worked out.
It worked out. You always fight against those sort of things. My position is they all went in immediately, though. They went in immediately. It took their lumps. They didn't sit and wait and play around for 2 years. They went in immediately. So if you're going to do it immediately. If you're going to sit and wait, get that bridge guy that can help you get to the playoffs and make pushes and runs to teach the young guy what it's all about.
There's also the Jared Goff model, though, which is where you don't start him right away, that he's not your guy on opening day, but you know that the second your team is eliminated or the second your team is out of a playoff picture, that you go to him and
start
the
clock. But I would
argue
with you pre, post, and halftime that that didn't help Jared Goff. You know what helped Jared Goff?
Sean McVay.
Getting rid of Jeff Fisher.
Yeah.
So you well, so
and that's my, but isn't and, Kyler Murray in a better spot right now?
This is going to be
under his belt.
You asking me about Kyler Murray? Like Kyler Murray, but I don't. I'm not an Arizona. I don't believe in that. I just don't believe in the Arizona Cardinals stuff.
I hear what you're saying.
This is what I believe in. I believe in Anthony Lynn's record right now. And if you're coach Anthony Lynn, and you've been in the fold now for 3 seasons. You made the playoffs once. You've missed it twice. You can come up with whatever reasons why you've missed it, but the reality is that you've missed it. If you're coach Anthony Lynn and you don't want to be in a position where you've missed the playoffs 3 out of 4 seasons, are you messing around with Justin Herbert or are you trying to bring in Colin Kaepernick if he doesn't go right with TT?
But that's what I was talking about earlier, though, LZ. Maybe I wasn't explaining it clear enough to you, but that's what I'm saying when I say – we are 3-2. We could be 0-5, or we could be 4-1. Our quarterback play ain't so good, but if I stay with this dude, I'm going to get fired. So I might as well play this guy that I got a little more – I'm going to probably have a little more faith in Colin Kaepernick, even though I trusted Taylor to do some things, but I'm not ready to go to Herbert. That's what I'm saying when you start talking about losing – your job. Now, all circumstances are different. You look at Dak Prescott, for instance. He went to a great team in a great situation. He was not supposed to be the starter. That team was built for Tony Romo, and he went in there. He did a terrific job as a rookie. Now he's getting ready to be one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league. Then you can look at the situation in Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes was drafted in the first round, sat around, learned a little bit under Alex Smith, but his coaches are different. So it's all, every situation is a little bit different when you start dealing with quarterbacks.
So if we're talking about different situations, let's create the perfect situation for Colin Kaepernick. The perfect situation would be a team that's pretty good, that has a quarterback that is established, that is not looking over his shoulder saying, when is Colin Kaepernick going to take my job? A coach that has been through some media stuff before where there's a whole bunch of eyes on him for reasons that are not necessarily just football related. And that team has a spot for that guy to go into because you do not have a viable backup already in place. That's a pretty small list of teams that check all of those boxes.
I can give you 4 off the top of my head. I can give you Seattle. I can give you the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I can give you the Chargers. And I can give you the Cleveland Browns, where those teams are all kind of in the mix with quarterbacks that backups that, I mean, that are not good with starters that pretty much are safe, except maybe, or I could give you Pittsburgh as one too.
Pittsburgh's a good one. I think Kansas City's a good one.
Kansas City's a good one. Kansas City's a good all. So there's probably 6 to 8 teams that make sense, but is there 6 to 8 teams and coaches willing to take on that stuff?
Okay, you mentioned one of these teams, Key. Seattle is a perfect example because Seattle has Geno Smith as their backup, and I would dare anybody to try to make an argument that Geno Smith's a better football player than Colin Kaepernick. It's just you can't do it. Kaepernick is better than Geno Smith, period. We're done here. And Russell Wilson would not be looking over his shoulder. Pete Carroll has been through stuff, so he's not worried about eyeballs. And yet that perfect situation, they said no. They said no.
They said no last time. They didn't say no this time, at least yet.
Pete Carroll just the other day said they like their quarterback room.
And guess who else said that? And we're talking about it. The Chargers. And if you ask the Kansas City Chiefs, they'll tell you the same thing. We like our quarterback room. They're not saying no. No means no. They're not saying no. They're saying we like what we have right now. You know that story. I'm not going anywhere right now. I'm here to stay. I enjoy being here. This has been great for me and my family. And then all of a sudden they leave. That's what they're telling you. They're giving you that game. They're just giving you that game. They testing the waters to get a feel for the way people are going to perceive it.
Until somebody says, yes, I'm going to be holding my breath. All right, 2020, not a great year. And believe it or not, it's actually getting worse. I'll explain next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. It has been a tough year for all of the reasons that we know, starting way back with Kobe Bryant's death shortly after the new year. We shortly thereafter had the outbreak of the coronavirus, the cancellation of life as we know it really more or less for the last several months. We're slowly starting to come back to some things. But how about this, guys? You can't get a drink on an airplane anymore. That a handful of airlines have suspended all or part of their alcoholic drink service in response to COVID-19. So when we finally decide to get back on an airplane, you're not even going to be able to get your little Bloody Mary or beer or champagne or whatever it is you want. You just got to sit there and go for that ride sober now.
No, they're not. It's not going to be no sober ride. No, I promise you that. It's going to be a lot
to be
of
sober.
Food, buying liquor in the little concourse. I saw that last night, I was like, oh, that ain't going to stop. All that's getting ready to do is raise the liquor sales up into the little
In the terminal?
In the terminal. This dude's going to be down his chots, because I was thinking, because I got to get on a flight this week coming up. And I was sitting there saying to myself, one of the airlines is not the airline I'm flying, but I was saying to myself, if I was flying one of those airlines, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get a headache before I get on the plane.
And what you need to do is get that gummy and consume the gummy right before you get into the Uber ride out to LAX. So by the time you get through security, this is the important part now. You got to make it through security first. By the time you get through security, you start to figure it out. Oh, okay, it's kicking in now. And now here's the important part, Travis.
But why you got to get through security?
You don't want to take it through the airport key.
It's a bad plan, brother. I'm trying to keep you out of the popo.
No, you ain't going to keep me because I'm not going to consume it in the first place.
The important thing to do, though, guys, is that you have to identify your gate before the full effects come pouring in. Because if you don't have your gate worked out before it kicks in, you might end up in a different country because, you know, you're not in the right state of mind.
Let me ask you this, though, Peter Pan. Is that a different feeling, though? I mean, the alcohol deal is it seems like that would be, it's different. It's a different, like I've seen. Well,
yes, it's different. To answer your question, it is different. It is,
yes,
your brain works differently.
That's what I'm saying. Yes. Y'all get to looking around and more slowly, weird and moving slow,
moving real slow. Yes. Remember, I told you I was sitting on my couch, and you got to been in my apartment. My apartment's not big, but I couldn't get outdoors to stop my little grill cover from blowing over the patio because the little gummy had me moving so slow. I thought I was running. I was still sitting on the couch.
Moving slow and probably paranoid is all outdoors.
But if we're
I actually paranoid.
Your plan, it's about a 1 out of 10 for me, the paranoia. It's a risk I'm willing to take. But that's another conversation. If you're going from, like, say, LA to Phoenix, your plan is a solid one, LZ. But if you're flying from LA to, say, New York City, or you're flying one of these cross the country flights, that's not going to get you to the home base.
I thought it gave you at least 5 hours.
No, well, I mean, I guess it depends. Really hard.
Sometimes you got to double up. But you remember now, you don't want to get arrested because it'd be a federal crime to transport stuff across state lines. So you need to consume it before you take off.
So once it becomes legalized in all the states, then you can just roll with it how you roll.
Well, I'm going to let somebody else go first. How about that?
I am willing to sacrifice and make that transition for you, Travis, and give you a full report based upon the changing of the laws.
Thank you, my brother.
That's research.
The liquor sales are certainly going to go through the roof in the terminals, and it's with some of those airlines that have decided not to serve alcohol on the planes because of the pandemic and limiting the interaction with the stewardess and the flight attendants.
Let's be honest, though, not everybody has the means to get properly in the proper frame of mind before getting the airplane bar, airport bars. Man, you can spend a fortune on just a couple of drinks. You can get wiped out before you even get a chance to get started.
That's why you got to go to the club. You got to go to the club, bro.
You're going to get a headache.
You got to go to the airline club.
If I have to fly one of them airlines, I'm going to get a headache before I get on the plane. I'm gonna get a headache. My head gonna explode because I'm gonna be down in it so much. I just know me when I get on the plane, and I gotta have a few because I just don't feel good. You know how that is. You gotta calm your little bit.
You have to figure out,
Travis, because you know I've done plenty of research on this. That's what I do. I'm a reporter.
Yes, indeed.
You have to figure out, is it cheaper to drink the alcohol in the common area, or is it more effective to buy a day pass for one of the clubs and drink for free? Now, some of these day passes are like 80-some bucks. So you got to ask yourself, am I going to drink 80-some bucks worth of alcohol? If I'm not, then you drink with the public. But if you're there early, if you're there 2 hours before your flight, if you're on an international flight, you spend that money on the club because you're going to come out ahead because you get some food with it your own bathroom. You got to just
before we move on to sports, just enlighten me here. But what if you do both?
Well, that's you got to be careful.
Well, Ben, you ain't going nowhere.
Yeah, that's a bad. Like LZ said, he's a reporter. I've done the research on that. That's a bad feeling. That's not what you want.
You need, pick a lane, bro. Pick a lane.
I'm looking at the TV right now, guys, and on the crawl, they just said that today, back in 2014, June 18th, 2014, was the day that Clayton Kershaw threw his no-hitter. 15 strikeouts, no walks. The only guy that got on base was because of an error in the infield. So it was one of those games, like, you can't do much more than strike out 15 guys, walk none, and give up no hits. It was one of those games, not a perfect game by the definition, but a perfect game, generally speaking. And this is part of what we're missing. I hear what you've been saying, Key, that baseball is slow and baseball is boring and baseball has 162 games and they're all, you know, because there's so many, any one game is essentially meaningless. And you're not wrong. But what baseball also gives you are these random events in the middle of the season that are extraordinary. And you never know when they're coming. You never know which night is going to be the night where you get to see something like that. And that's part of the appeal of baseball, too, that the more games we have, the more chance you get to see a 3-home run game, a 4-home run game, a no hitter, a guy hit for a cycle, just these extraordinary events that don't come around very often. And if we're playing 50 games or no games, all of that's out the window.
No, it's true. But, you know, when I go back and I look, though, and maybe you could correct me here, Travis, why do I feel like 12, 13, 14, 15 strikeouts nowadays? It's like an eternity to get one. But back in the 80s and the 90s, every time I look up, dudes was getting 12, 15, 16, 17 strikeouts.
Why do I feel like that?
I
don't know why you feel like that, because the numbers tell you the opposite, that we're getting more strikeouts than ever before. More guys
maybe it was just that I was looking at the best pitchers and it seemed like the best ones was always hanging the K signs from the
Thinking, you know what it might have been, too, Key? It's just the prevalence. Like, when we were growing up and watching baseball on TV, the weekend game, it was going to be Dwight Gooden. It was going to be Roger Clemens. And those guys were going to go strike out 12 or 15 guys every Saturday afternoon.
That's what it is. Nolan Ryan
was going to strike out 15 guys more or less every time he pitched.
Because I would hear Vince Scully say, well, this is his 12th strikeout of the, you know, and I'm sitting there going, well, they act like getting 12 strikeouts now is just like the biggest thing in the world. I'm like, this dude was doing that quite frequently back then.
There's another part too, Key, is that guys like Clayton Kershaw, they don't pitch nine innings anymore, so it's hard to get 12 or 15 strikeouts in six innings. I mean, there's just not enough opportunities. That's a big part of it. It's just another reminder that baseball screwed it up. It's another reminder that those little one-off events that are truly extraordinary are going to become fewer and farther between because there's just fewer games to actually have it happen. All right.
We're Colin with you, Kaepernick, Travis. We're with you.
It needs to come back, man. In fact, how close are they to an agreement? How close is Major League Baseball to finally figuring it out and getting back on the field? That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.